And I'm just saying this so that we can start thinking a little bit more actively about the foods that we're eating. I hate to say think openly. We should need to be thinking actively. We need to be really considering whether or not some of the symptoms that we're experiencing could be related to these things. But how would we know if we're not taught, right? Let's go.
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corey Beth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode. Let's go.
Hey everyone, today we're covering a topic we've discussed in the past with some other guests, most notably Dr. Anthony Chafee, as well as Sally Norton. If you're new to this podcast, then this will likely be the first detailed discussion you've heard on this topic. But if you've been one of our loyal listeners, then this episode will serve as a detailed reminder. I'm going to be going solo on this one today. Corey Beth had taken one look at the topic and said, "You're probably going to go off on this one, aren't you?" And I said, "Yep." She said, "Great. Do this one by yourself. I got to get over to the post office anyway." So she's there and we're here, just you and me. Today, we're talking about vegetables, more specifically, what no one tells you about vegetables. Now, if we think back to our childhood and we're sitting at the dinner table, what did our parents constantly reinforce? They would say, if you don't eat your vegetables, you won't get dessert. And it was a pretty compelling argument. You know, we all wanted to make sure that we got our ice cream, our cake, or our cookies, whatever it was after dinner was over. And if we had to painfully make our way through our vegetables in order to get there, we'd do it. But if I were as savvy back then as I am today when it comes to nutrition, then faced with this statement that if you don't eat your vegetables, you won't get dessert, my answer would have been, you got a deal. Because truth be told, maybe neither of those options are actually good for us. Here's what we're often told when it comes to vegetables. We're told that they are a superfood, that they're loaded with nutrients, that they're high in fiber, they're high in antioxidants, they could serve as a good source of protein, they help us with constipation, with our bowel movements, that they're low in calories, that they feed our gut bacteria, and that they can support our immune system. But here's what we're not told. We're not told that many of these same vegetables contain phytates or phytic acid, which are basically anti-nutrients. We're also not told that they're very low bioavailability of nutrients. So what I mean by that is just because a particular vegetable is loaded with vitamin A or vitamin C, it doesn't mean our body is actually getting an opportunity to absorb all of those nutrients, meaning there may be X amount of vitamin A in a particular vegetable, but the percentage of it that is actually utilized by our body is a very, very small percentage. Regarding fiber, what we're not often told is that fiber is non-essential. While our body requires protein as a building block, while it requires fat for hormonal function and to provide us with a source of energy, fiber plays no essential role in our health or in our body. Fiber is really nothing more than the non-digestible parts of plants. But does it actually contribute anything to our health? Well, some experts, some research points to correlations between fiber and certain health outcomes, but we know for a fact that fiber basically plays no vital role in terms of providing us with any nutrition. Next, what about antioxidants? Well, here's the thing. Oxidative stress is low without plant foods, meaning when we think about the reasons why we have a lot of oxidative stress in our body, sure, our lifestyle plays a big, big role in that. But what also plays a really big role in it are the foods that we're eating. And what kind of foods help create a lot of this oxidative stress? Well, they're plant foods. Most specifically, a lot of grains and then sugars. And once we start to remove many of these things from our diet, well, guess what? Our oxidative stress is very low. And thus, is there a need for antioxidants when we have a low amount of oxidative stress in our body? Absolutely not. Then there's the topic of protein. We always love when vegans or vegetarians point to the fact that you could get all of your protein from these plant-based sources. And is it true? Yeah, it's absolutely true. You can get protein from plant sources. However, it tends to be very insufficient with regards to the amino acids. So let's back up for a second. A few episodes ago, we had talked about proteins and that the role that protein plays in our bodies is very much like that of Lego pieces. When we're consuming protein, those proteins break down into amino acids, and our body requires 21 of these amino acids, and 9 of them are considered essential. So what we find with a lot of plant-based foods is that although there are some of these amino acids available, many plant foods do not have the complete amino acid profile, meaning those 9 essential ones. Oftentimes, there's usually 1 or 2 that's missing. But not only that, even if they are present, they're present in amounts that are so insignificant that you would need to eat an exorbitant amount of that plant food in order to get the amount of amino acids that you'd get from just a little bit of an animal-based protein. So let's go on to the next one. They tell us that it helps constipation. It helps us to pass our stools more easily and keep us regular. What we're not often told, though, is that high fiber diets are at the root of constipation for many people. And there was a very interesting study on this in which they took a group of people that were following a high fiber diet, but also had constipation. They split them up into 3 groups. So the first group of subjects, nothing changed. They just kept them on their high fiber diet. The second group, they simply reduced the amount of fiber that they had been consuming. And then in the third group, they eliminated fiber completely from their diet. Over the next several weeks, they checked in with the subjects to see how these changes in their nutrition were affecting constipation as well as other markers such as gut discomfort. And what was very interesting to see is that, of course, as we might imagine, with the control group that did not change anything, nothing changed. They continued to experience constipation. They continued to experience gut discomfort. In the group that lowered the amount of fiber that they consumed, their constipation got a little bit better. And they also noted a reduction in the amount of gut discomfort that they would feel. The last group was really interesting. Those that eliminated the fiber altogether improved their constipation, and they no longer felt any gut discomfort. And I think it was in all except maybe 1 or 2 subjects. Like, that was the result across the board. And when we understand what fiber does, the fact that fiber just simply bulks up our stools, we start to recognize that in the face of all the other ways that we're eating, all the other foods that we're consuming, if all we're doing is bulking up our stools, how is that going to help us to pass our stools more easily? It's not. It's like sitting in a traffic jam and thinking that the answer to the traffic jam is to just add more cars onto the highway. We know logically that makes absolutely no sense. And so oftentimes what is at the root cause of the problem for people who are experiencing constipation is they're not eating enough fat. Because we've been conditioned to follow a low-fat diet, happens is without that fat available, it makes it harder to soften our stools and thus pass our stools. However, in the absence of that fat, well, we need something to help move that food along. And that is where fiber can come in and be of assistance. We're also told that it feeds our gut bacteria, that these plant foods are good for that particular reason. And with all the research being done on the microbiome, people are finally recognizing that, hey, this might actually be something that's pretty important. So let me focus on what I can do to improve my gut health. But what we're not told is that these same foods are what irritate the gut. So when people have IBS, Crohn's, celiacs, one of the first things that they are told to do is to follow a low fiber diet. They are told to remove these plant foods or at least significantly reduce the amount of them that they're consuming. This includes the consumption of wheats and grains and all of our breads and our pastas and all those foods, because those are the foods that cause gut irritation. So it's a very interesting point of view. We're saying on this one side that well, this is good. That fiber is going to help to feed our gut bacteria, so we should eat these plant foods. But on the other side, we're saying, but as a result of it, your gut may irritate you from time to time or constantly. So which is it? I mean, we know that our gut bacteria will adapt to the particular environment that it's presented with. So from my position, I just don't believe that it's necessary to be feeding ourselves these plant foods just to feed that gut bacteria, which we can feed with animal-based foods as well. And then the last point that they often make is that plant foods help to support our immune system, but they don't tell us that they're also triggers for a lot of autoimmune diseases. And so to take it back to when we interviewed our guest, Dr. Anthony Chafee, he made a very bold statement, which is plants are trying to kill you. Well, not really. They're not trying to kill us, but what they are trying to do is protect themselves. So we think about this logically for a moment. We as human beings and just about every other animal in existence has some way to fend off predators, right? We have a way to protect ourselves, whether we're using our fists, our feet, our teeth. We have some protective mechanism in place. Other animals give off certain poisons in order to protect themselves, or they have stingers. Well, when it comes to plants, they're in a very vulnerable position. You think about it. If you are out in the wilderness and you're walking by a bunch of mushrooms, do you go and just pick those mushrooms and begin to consume them? No, because we know that many mushrooms are poisonous and that they could kill you. And the reason why mushrooms, just like every other plant, has these poisons is to protect themselves from predators. They don't want to get eaten. But how do they fend off these predators if they don't have the same mechanism to protect themselves that the rest of us do? And this is where these plant toxins come in. Now, if you go back to 1999, Bruce Ames did a research study. He was commissioned to find out how the pesticides that were being sprayed on the plant foods and on our wheats, our grains, all of that stuff. He was trying to figure out how much this was affecting our health. Was this cancer causing, or to what degree? But what he ended up learning was that plants contain 10,000 times more natural pesticides by weight than sprayed pesticides, and that they were more likely to cause cancer. We know for a fact that there are carcinogens in plant foods. I'm not talking about anything that is not known. I'm just talking about what we're not taught. You can go onto Google right now and type in carcinogens in plants, and you can literally pull up lists that will show you how many carcinogens are in plant foods. And it's interesting because on most of those lists, you'll find almost no less than 30. And in Brussels sprouts alone, there's 136. So given the option between eating foods that have carcinogens in them and foods that don't, which would you choose? I mean, if that's all you were told, you weren't told anything about the food itself. You weren't told that it's a vegetable and it contains vitamins and has antioxidants in it, and it's got loaded with all this fiber. If you weren't told any of that, if you were just presented with a food and you were told, here's what's in this food, would you still eat it if you saw that list of 136 carcinogens in it? Chances are you wouldn't. But in this case, because it's plant foods, we don't think twice about it. I remember Dr. Chafee also pointing out that when he was doing his research in cancer biology, that the professors would often preach how they wouldn't feed their kids vegetables because of all the carcinogens that were found in plants. Now, what we're going to hear argued on the other side is that, well, those are not carcinogens that are actually harmful to humans and what have you. But at the end of the day, plants are trying to protect themselves. So they are producing these carcinogens as well as other pesticides, which can have a negative impact on us. And this is before we even talk about the foods that we eat being covered in glyphosate, which is Roundup, which we also know is cancer causing. At the end of the day, the question becomes, how helpful are plants compared to how harmful they may be? That's going to be a decision that each of us has to make for ourselves. But I'm going to go through just a few of them with you so that you can better understand what are in some of these plant foods and how this shows up in us.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying our show and finding it valuable. If you could do us a quick favor, it would mean the world to us. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Your reviews help us reach more people and share our message. Plus, we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for being awesome and supporting us. Now, back to the show.
So the first one let's talk about is lectins. And lectins are found in nuts, eggplant, tomatoes, potatoes, chickpeas, and chili peppers. And what lectins do is they bind to insulin receptors. We know from all of our previous discussions that getting a chronic insulin response is not a good thing, right? When we have elevated insulin for long periods of time, this is what leads to insulin resistance and then creates a cascade of other hormonal issues. With lectins, if we are eating these types of foods in high amounts, they're binding to these insulin receptors and they mimic an insulin response. So although we may not be sitting down and eating a pound of sugar, we may just be eating, I don't know, like a few ounces of potato, the insulin response is similar. Same thing when we're eating foods that are not high in carbohydrates, like peanuts. They're not high in carbohydrates, but they are very high in lectins. And if we're eating these on a regular basis, those too are going to cause an insulin response. We also know that lectins deteriorate the cell lining of our gut. And this is what causes gut irritation and can lead to things like leaky gut. They can bind to brain receptors and induce Parkinson's, as well as they can degenerate receptors and cause inflammation in the brain. So these are, again, not things that we don't know. They're just not things that we're told or taught or warned about. Another one that we can discuss is oxalates. We had Sally Norton on our shows, and she's probably the foremost expert on oxalates. And oxalates are found in spinach, in Swiss chard, in kale, rhubarb, potatoes, beans, chocolate, nuts, nut butters, and berries. What most people don't know is that 8 out of 10 times when we have kidney stones, the cause is oxalates. So eating these foods that are high in oxalates and eating them on a regular basis, 8 out of 10 times, 80% of the time, if you get a kidney stone, it's because of consumption of oxalates. And we know that these oxalates also, they leach calcium from our bones, which ultimately leads to osteoporosis. So as much as we're trying to do our best to prevent osteoporosis by doing our resistance training, we could be counteracting that just by the foods that we're eating. So if we are eating a lot of these high oxalate foods, this could be the end result. Remember when we did that episode with Sally Norton, and afterwards we had posted on social media some clips from it, and it was crazy to see the comments coming through from people. You know, some people are angry saying there's no way that these oxalates cause all of this damage or that eating spinach and kale is actually bad for you. And what's interesting is this, we all respond differently to the foods that we're consuming. Whereas right now, with all this information that I'm presenting, I'm sure that some of you are probably thinking there's no way, this can't be. And that may be true for you, but for someone else who's experiencing this joint pain or has gout and rheumatoid arthritis, at the root of it may be some form of oxalate poisoning. And this is how it expresses itself. It's just that when our experience doesn't match up with someone else's, we find it very difficult to believe what they're saying or what they're implying. And I feel like that's what comes up a lot in these discussions around vegetables. But what we also fail to realize is that we may be experiencing symptoms such as the ones that I've already laid out, whether that is joint pain, whether that's kidney stones, whether that's mental fatigue or disrupted sleep, lack of focus, or perpetually being very moody. Those would be responses to the foods that we're eating, particularly these plant foods. But why don't we ever consider that? Well, because we're never taught that it could be a problem. And so we automatically look past this as being a potential issue. And I'm just saying this so that we can start thinking a little bit more actively about the foods that we're eating. I hate to say think openly. We should need to be thinking actively. We need to be really considering whether or not some of the symptoms that we're experiencing could be related to these things. But how would we know if we're not taught, right? So the last one that I just want to go over quickly is phytates and phytic acid. And I mentioned this one earlier These are the things that are found in oatmeal, beans, soybeans, nuts, seeds, brown rice, wheat, rye, corn. And what phytic acid or phytates do is they bind to essential minerals, minerals like calcium, magnesium, zinc, iron, and chromium. We all know those are important, right? So what happens is when we're eating these foods, this phytic acid binds to them. And once this happens, your body no longer has access to these nutrients. This is why we call it an anti-nutrient, because even if there are nutrients available in the food, our ability to actually utilize that is diminished. And in these cases, it actually blocks our body from being able to utilize it. And the more of these foods that we eat, the more we get blocked. At this point, you may feel like your brain is melting from all this information that flies in the face of what our mom, our doctors, and everyone else has ever told us. And yet, none of it is false. The big question then is, what does this mean for how I eat? Do I go full carnivore? Do I drop all the vegetables? Can I ever have a carb again? And my favorite, wait, isn't all alcohol derived from plants? Before we go to the extreme and say, I am going to drop everything, which may or may not be the right answer for you, we need to answer some other questions for ourselves. Questions like, how is the way I'm currently eating working for me? And be honest. This is a tough one for many people to be honest about because we don't always associate the way that we feel with the way that we eat. And in many instances, we normalize the way we feel, especially when everybody else around us is expressing the same thing, who also happen to be eating the same things as us. Another question might be, am I as lean and as muscular as I want to be? How's my energy? How does my body feel? I mean, are we waking up in the morning with aches and pains? Do we do some activity and now we can't function the right way for the next few days? And listen, don't confuse this with being sore after a workout or going and doing some hard activity. What I really mean is, do we feel this way regularly? And are we waking up with tightness in our back? Does it take us 45 minutes after a hot shower and walking around before we finally start to loosen up and feel decent? And if that's you, then chances are there's something at the root which we have not addressed yet. And just to go back to the oxalates, for many people, the thing that actually shows up most in terms of oxalate poisoning is joint pain. And that's because with oxalates, what happens is they crystallize. And they crystallize in between our joints, which make us stiff and create all of this pain within the joints. Another question we want to ask ourselves is like, what is my mental clarity like? You know, are you always clear? Are you always focused? Or do you have trouble getting focused? What am I willing to try? But I think more importantly, what am I willing to do to improve? Because many of us will quite often dip our toe into something. We feel like it might help, but we'll somewhat give it a half-hearted effort. You know, we'll do it a little bit. And if it doesn't provide any immediate benefit, we don't see the fruit of it right from the start, then we just move on or go back to what we were doing. But I'd like the second question of what am I willing to do to improve? Because that's a very different question that leads to very different actions. So if you're in that place of, okay, I'm real willing to do something about the way that I feel, and I'm willing to do something to figure out whether or not these foods that have been staples in my diet are actually serving me or hindering me, then let's talk about the approach we should take from this point forward. The approach I subscribe to is that of subtraction, then addition. So what we mean by that is if you truly want to know how your food is affecting you, we start by eliminating everything except the essentials. Then after 2 to 4 weeks, you can systematically add things back in to measure the impact. So for some of you, the process of subtraction may take several weeks. For others, it could literally be done overnight. What's the difference? Oftentimes, it's just based on your personality. You know, for some people, that process of taking things out, we're not ready to do it. Mentally, we're not prepared to do it, or you're still sitting in that place where you just don't believe everything that you're being told. you're not really sure that all of this stuff about vegetables being bad is true. And so you're very slow to take action on it. And that's okay. I mean, some of us are like that, where only by doing things slowly and progressively will we finally arrive where we need to be. So in this instance, it may be that for your first week, you're just seeing what happens when I take out all these grains. I'm going to start with that. Let me see how I feel. Then you start to feel a little bit better. And then the next week you may say, all right, I think I'm ready to take out this next thing. Maybe that is the vegetables for you. And so you take that out and you see how you feel. Or you're that person who says, well, I'm ready to try this. I've tried everything else. Let's just do it. And we jump in with 2 feet. And overnight, you literally go from eating a standard American diet or even a quote unquote healthy diet that's loaded with fruits and vegetables and lean meats and all of that to eating nothing but fatty proteins. In either scenario, it's not until you completely eliminate everything for a reasonable amount of time to measure the result that you should begin adding back in. What I mean by that is you need to get to that place of full elimination and stay there for at least 2 to 4 weeks before you start to add things back in. Then when you do so, you're going to be able to tell immediately whether a food is impacting your mental clarity, whether it's affecting your energy. You'll know after that meal, wow, was that something that all this time was dragging me down and making it harder for me to move on from my meal going and go back right to work? Because I know that for myself, I could say that that was certainly the case. I remember eating those lunches that were filled with vegetables. It was salads and lots of berries along with my lean protein. And yet I would finish that meal and feel completely exhausted, like totally drained, and couldn't understand why. But it wasn't until a period of complete elimination, just taking all of that stuff out and then having meals in which I was eating 5 or 6 whole eggs, having some bacon, not having any other carbohydrates, that I recognize, huh, I actually feel pretty good right now. I feel like I didn't even eat, in the sense that it's not dragging me down. I feel like I have low energy, that my body has to work really hard now to digest this food, and I can't get focused or get back on track. But we won't know until we get there. So whether you are that person who needs to slowly subtract over time to prove to yourself whether or not having these foods in are beneficial or not, as well as to be able to slowly see that it's not having a negative impact on you by taking these things out, then great. Be that person. Take your approach, right? Do what you feel you need to do in order to get to the right place. Now, if all this sounds great and you're like, cool, I'm ready to give this a try, what do I do? What are the essentials? Well, here are the essentials: beef, butter, bacon, eggs. Those are the essentials. I'm not kidding. If you're wondering, you know, where am I going to get all my nutrients from if I'm not eating all of these vegetables or all of these grains, where am I going to get it from? You get it from there. You get it from here. With these foods alone, you can literally get nearly every nutrient that your body needs. And if you're wondering about the ones that are missing, like, well, where am I going to get my vitamin C? Well, when we're eating this way, we're eating in a very low oxidative manner, which means that these foods are not going to create the oxidative stress that makes it necessary to have large amounts of vitamin C every single day to bring down that oxidation. But if you're going to eat beef, butter, bacon, and eggs only, there are a couple things that you should be aware of. Number one, the transition from low or no carb from eating high amounts of carb is not easy. For many people, the first several days can be miserable. Why? Because you're carb dependent. You have been so reliant upon carbohydrates to provide you energy that in the absence of these foods, your body now has to make this metabolic shift over to utilizing fat as its primary source of energy. And also to that point, if you're wondering, wait, if I'm not eating carbohydrates, then where does energy come from? It comes from fat. We have two energy sources, carbohydrates and fat. And the truth is, we also have all of this stored body fat. It's not just the dietary fat that provides us energy, it's our stored body fat. And in that stored body fat we also have stored nutrients. So if we are concerned that, wait a second, you know, I'm not eating all of these nutrients every single day, don't worry. They've been stored away in your fat cells and they are ready to be released once you begin to access those fat stores. The next thing to watch for, though, is going to be bowel movements. This is always the big one. And again, it's usually this one that becomes the trigger for somebody not following through on following this type of eating plan. That is, we've been so conditioned to utilize or rely upon fiber and carbohydrates to help move our bowels that now in the absence of them, maybe those bowel movements don't come as regularly or don't come as easily. But I'll tell you this, if you are eating enough fat, which you can easily do if you're eating full fat beef, if you're eating butter, if you're having some bacon, and if you're eating whole eggs, you will be getting enough fat to help soften your stools and continue to have regular bowel movements. If not, you may need to add some electrolytes into what you're doing. So be sure to salt your food. But generally speaking, this sometimes is a hangup for some people who are making this transition. Transitions are not always pretty. We can experience that low energy. We can experience having some fatigue. We can experience the lack of bowel movements. And immediately it scares us. And we're ready to just go back to what we were doing, even though what we've been doing has not been serving us. So I'm going to just simply leave you with this. Beef, butter, bacon, eggs. These are great foods to get started with in terms of the essentials. And we're not saying that you have to do this forever. This is the elimination portion of your diet where you are going to just take out everything that is a potential trigger and then just leave in these foods where we know we are getting optimal amounts of protein, fat, and nutrients. And then after a couple of weeks of this, we can add those other foods back in, even if they're vegetables, and see the result that transpires. So I hope this helps some of you today. And maybe you've been sitting on the fence wondering about whether or not eating vegetables was at the root of some of the problems that you've been experiencing, or maybe you never even considered that vegetables could be at the root of some of the symptoms that you might be experiencing. But now you are armed with that information.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're a busy working parent like us, you understand the daily challenges. Our mission is to make exercise and nutrition simple and exciting, helping you and your family thrive even on the busiest days. We've got a fantastic free 5-day online challenge that's tailor-made for super busy people like you.
If you like a high-vibe workout environment with professional coaching, swing by one of our franchise studios for a free intro workout.
Check the show notes for details or head on over to purephysique.com when you have a moment. We know those moments are rare.
Until next time, lift weights, eat meat, and never forget, you were created on purpose for a purpose. I want to use a different word.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.